The final pasuk of Parshas Kadesh, it's in the end of Bo, and it's one of the two sections inserted into the tefillin. The final pasuk has a very odd conclusion. V'shamarta es ha'chukah hazos l'moada miyamim yamima. You should preserve this chok. Now, presumably, the literal rendition of this pasuk refers to the halachas of Korban Pesach and the halachas of Pesach proper, possibly the halachas of Peter Rechem, firstborn, which are loosely based on Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the word chok, of course, doesn't only mean irrational mitzvos, it also means foundational, constitutional mitzvos, for the word engraved, because typically foundational principles were engraved on stones or tablets, either literally or metaphorically. So presumably the conclusion of this section, which we know is Kaddishly called Bechar, which talks about Pesach-related themes and Pesach-related mitzvos, demands that we preserve these foundational ceremonies and rituals. But if you take a micro look at the pasuk appears immediately after tefillin. V'hayelcha liyotzo yadcha ulizikaron beninecha l'man tiyataratz Hashem b'ficha ki b'yad chazakot siyacha Hashem b'mitzvayim v'sharmarta azachuk hazos l'moada miyamim yamima. Based on this more micro reading, the term v'shamarta azachuk hazos refers to tefillin. The Gemara Nida quotes a minag of b'nei ma'arava, people that lived in Israel, that they would recite a bracha when removing their tefillin. Baruch ata Hashem Elokeinu melech olam, asher kidushanu b'mitzvosav v'tzivanu lishmar chukav, v'shamarta asachuka. So they would remove their tefillin, and for them tefillin would be removed at night. They would wear tefillin all day. While removing tefillin, they would recite a bracha based on this lashon, based on this language and syntax in the pasuk. Very odd. The only mitzvah which is accompanied by a bracha when the mitzvah is completed. Rabbi Soloveitchik explains that there really are two mitzvahs to tefillin. There's the robotic mitzvah of physical activity, similar to lulav, matzah, sukkah. Obviously, with every mitzvah, the awareness and consciousness enhances the mitzvah. But yet, we paskin mitzvos ein tzrichas kavana, and a mere technical, physical activity suffices, at least for the baseline of the mitzvah. But then there's a second part to the mitzvah. That second part of the mitzvah is to install a human being, a human body, a human person, with the kedusha that stems from wrapping yourself in a sefer Torah, or at least salient portions of a sefer Torah. In fact, Rav Soloveitchik explained, that's why we recite two brachos on the mitzvah of tefillin. L'aniach tefillin and al mitzvah tefillin. Depending on how you understand a well-known machlokus between Rashi and the Beinu Tam. But it's not so simple to just associate one bracha with the shel yad and one bracha with the shel rosh. The Rav claimed that one bracha, l'aniach, refers to the actual physical activity of donning tefillin. Whereas the second bracha refers to the kedusha that tefillin imparts to the person wearing tefillin, and that's an essential part of the mitzvah. It's not secondary or incidental, it's not some consequence. The mitzvah is designed to achieve two aims, to wear the tefillin and to receive the kedusha which tefillin imparts. This kedusha which tefillin imparts to a person wearing as part of the mitzvah, of course, accounts for two very interesting halachos. One, that a child's chinuch for tefillin is significantly delayed. A child begins chinuch for Torah when he can speak, for tzitzis when he starts to wear reasonably toddler-type clothing. He begins the mitzvah chinuch for sukkah when he can sit outside in the sukkah. And yet the chinuch for tefillin is delayed to the very last minutes, a week before, a month before, a few weeks before, depending upon different minhagim. Since tefillin installs kedusha in a human body, part of the mitzvah is maintaining body awareness and body suitability, not allowing bodily gases to emerge or to be emitted, other forms of bodily emissions, there could be diarrhea, those types of bodily deposits. And since the katan can't be shomer gufa until a very, very protracted or advanced stage, so it's not just that the tefillin will be desecrated if the body can't be controlled, but he's simply incapable of fulfilling the full mitzvah. And since he's incapable of fulfilling the full mitzvah, there's no purpose to the chinuch. The Rambam writes about the type of body discipline that must be maintained when wearing tefillin. Hilchos tefillin, perek dalet, halacha tesvav. Tefillin tzrichim guf naki. She zahir shelo teitzi imenu ruach milamata. You can't allow any gases to emerge. You can't sleep in tefillin because while you're asleep, you can't control your body. It also explains, and this has come under, I think a lot of people aren't fully aware, women are pater from zman gramas. Yet, the general inclination is to strongly, strongly encourage women to perform as many mitzvahs as they should zman grama as they can. That's why we take such efforts to enable shofar for women as best as possible, space constraints allowing sukkah for women, every mitzvah sasein, and in this Ashkenazic world, women recite a bracha. So even though there's a dispensation for zman grama, we try to equalize and encourage. Yet there's one mitzvah that classically was discouraged for women. There were exceptions throughout history, but the Shulchan Aruch clearly sides towards the discouraging, and that's the mitzvah of tefillin. And it's come under a lot of controversy and public conversation in recent years, but I'm not sure that people fully realize why this mitzvah is being discouraged. It's because, ideally, the mitzvah demands a guf naki. And every person who wears tefillin is taking a great, great risk. On the one hand, the goal is to perform the mitzvah. On the other hand, if a guf naki isn't maintained, if a clean body can't be maintained, then A, the mitzvah will be underperformed, and obviously the kedusha of this mini sefer Torah will be compromised. Which means that people who are absolutely mandated and obligated to perform the mitzvah have no choice. And you have to take as much discipline and as much focus as you can not to allow any compromising of a guf naki when you're wearing tefillin. Someone, for example, who has diarrhea, uncontrollable diarrhea, is simply pater from tefillin. They shouldn't put on tefillin. But a katan, who during their younger years can't possibly maintain a guf naki, shouldn't be involved in any engagement in tefillin because the price is so high and he's not yet chayev. Once he turns 13, you have to take that risk and run that obstacle course, so to speak. That same risk-benefit analysis is what governs the discouraging of women to wear tefillin. Women are pater. So anyone who's pater shouldn't be wearing tefillin because there is no demand. Obviously, there's benefit for every mitzvah, but there's no demand that that benefit be attempted. And the risks of guf naki simply outweigh the lack of concrete halachic responsibility. And of course, in the case of women, again, just simply because the biology is different, it's even more complicated to consider the preservation of a guf naki in ways that men don't have to or aren't exposed to. So that's the reason that a katan delays wearing tefillin. That's the reason that although women are encouraged, strongly encouraged, to perform every single mitzvah sase from which they're exempted. And that's why I think tzitzis is very different from tefillin. Tefillin has real halachic issues, discouraging women from engagement. Again, and I'm not saying it's aser. There are many, many women who wore, not many, but there are certainly individual women who wore throughout history. Again, in the post-Shulchan Aruch world, the question of women wearing tefillin becomes a far different question. It's not just about the issue per se, but about the authority of Shulchan Aruch, the contour, the halachic process. But for a woman wearing tzitzis, it doesn't have the same halachic complications. It may have a public issue, and that's something that has to be considered. The public ramifications, that's not really the topic of this shiur. And the requirements or the goal of trying to suffuse a human body with kedusha doesn't just demand a guf naki, it also demands a level of expanded religious consciousness, which the Rambam writes about 10 halachos later. I quoted from Perek Dalet, halacha tesvav, about guf naki. The Rambam in Perek Dalet, halacha chafei, describes the kedushas tefillin, kedushasam gidolahi, has a high level of kedusha, and this kedusha is imparted to a human being. Kol zman shatfilin berosho shel adam v'alzro. When the tefillin is on his body, he should be humble, anav. He should be pious and God-fearing, yirei shamayim. He should be focused on issues of material rather than issues of triviality. Eino nimshach b'schok u'v'sicha b'teila. Shouldn't engage in frivolity. Eino mehara machshavas ra'os. He shouldn't allow his mind to wander to toxic or noxious thoughts. Ella mefana libo b'divrei ha'emes v'hatzedek. He should try to focus as long as possible on religiously meaningful, morally meaningful thoughts. And here's the great irony. The Rambam says, therefore, a person should try to wear tefillin all day. And in fact, Chazal did. Rav was never caught walking 4 amos without tefillin. Because ideally, tefillin is meant to trigger that expanded religious consciousness, and therefore, as a trigger, it should be worn all day. The irony is, it's because of the demands of tefillin, both upon our consciousness, emotionally, mentally, as well as on our physical body, and because we're unable to maintain that, so we have rolled tefillin back from a full day experience to a 45-minute experience at most. And even then, we have a hard time maintaining the consciousness, and hopefully not, but hopefully we can maintain the physical body awareness of a gufnaki, even if we can't maintain machshava nakiya. That's why I think it's so important for people to try as best as they can not to take off tefillin too quickly. I think it's important to, even within our 45-minute condensed tefillin experience, it should be a sense of wistfulness and longing to wear tefillin a bit longer rather than hastily removing it. We all have times in our life that we have to remove our tefillin quickly, but for some it becomes a chronic daily part of their schedule. And I think, obviously, you could say, well, if I daven in a quicker minyan, then I'd be wearing tefillin for a much shorter time frame, even if I wore them to the end of davening. So let me go to a more extended davening and take them off earlier. But I think experientially taking tefillin off early misses the point. You should linger in your tefillin. And that's why I try to learn a little bit in the mornings with the boys with their tefillin on, just to give them that sense that tefillin is this lost experience that we daven for. When Beis HaMikdash is restored, we expect to wear tefillin again all day. And even though our tefillin is limited to a 45-minute experience, sometimes symbolism can replace reality. Not replace it, but at least try to capture it and distill some of its flavor. So so we see some people, when they take off tefillin, you'll see them unwinding their tefillin just by moving their hand in a clockwise or counterclockwise direction and allowing the straps of tefillin to fall off, because they feel that a more direct right-handed, I'm talking for righties who wear tefillin on their left hand, using your right hand to forcibly remove the straps from your left hand may be too frontal and too truncated an experience for tefillin, rather than just allowing the tefillin to fall off naturally because of the counterclockwise revolutions of your left hand. Rabbi Soloveitchik was extremely, extremely makbid that on Rosh Chodesh, when people remove their tefillin before Musaf. So there is a minhag for certain people to take their tefillin off and daven Musaf B'tzibur as quickly as possible at the cost of leaving tefillin exposed to the open air. Rabbi Soloveitchik was very, very makbid that the tefillin should be wound and bound and replaced into their bags before Musaf begins. And from what I heard, I didn't hear this from him, but I heard from some people who heard in his name, even if you're davening in a minyan that doesn't have that custom, Baruch Hashem, I found that more and more minyanim are adopting that custom of slightly delaying Musaf so as to allow tefillin to be properly replaced. But even if you daven in a minyan that recites Musaf 10, 15 seconds after Ashrei Uval Etzion, Rav Soloveitchik felt, so I've heard, that protecting the Kedusha of tefillin is important enough that it overtallies tefillah b'tzibur. So you should calmly, quickly, but calmly bound your tefillin, wind your tefillin, put it back in its case, and then daven musaf, or at the very least, if you feel that you want to grab a quick musaf with the tzibur, at least put your tefillin back in the bag, not leave them exposed, because it compromises the Kedusha of tefillin. You can compromise the Kedusha of tefillin not just by non-maintenance of proper body and mind awareness, and also by just leaving the tefillin exposed and unattended to. This is the reason that they recited a bracha when they removed their tefillin at shkia at night. Removing tefillin at night, it may be a deraisa, that's machlokas amoraim, in the Gemara Menachos. Laila loves man tefillin min hatara, umid rabbanan. Moshita says only loves man tefillin min rabbanan, min hatara, there's no difference. But either way, Laila is loves man tefillin because Laila is not a time that a person can adequately and sufficiently preserve Kiddushas Guf, probably even not Kiddushas Moach, Kiddushas Machshava. So taking off tefillin at night is not just terminating the mitzvah. Taking off tefillin at night is preserving the Kiddushas Tefillin. To a degree, it's part of the mitzvah. The same Kiddushas Tefillin and Kiddushas Adam that was experienced during the day is now being preserved in a zone or time period in which the Kiddusha can't be fully attended to. So it's not the conclusion of the mitzvah, it's part of the ongoing attendance to tefillin. That's why the bracha is recited, and that's why the bracha is lishmar chukav, to protect and to preserve the foundational kedusha of tefillin. The Gemara in Rosh Hashanah talks about consequences which will befall poshe Yisrael begufan, people who betray mitzvos, disobey mitzvos with their bodies. And Rav comments, this refers to, interesting phrase, karkafta v'lo manach tefillin, a head that doesn't don tefillin. Why are they called poshe Yisrael begufan? And why is tefillin the disobedience that warrants designation of poshe Yisrael begufan? Rav explained, because unlike other mitzvahs which are performed with our bodies, tefillin is a mitzvah performed upon our bodies, with the bodies being part of the subject or part of the material of the mitzvah to create the kedusha upon and within a human experience. And therefore, disobeying, non-donning tefillin warrants the designation of poshe Yisrael begufan. We have lost the opportunity, or we have neglected the opportunity to create Kedusha Saguf, which is part and parcel, an inherent element of the mitzvah of tefillin. And the level or layer of the mitzvah that warrants the second bracha. So this is loosely based on the Rav's writings, Shiurim, that tefillin is meant to instill Kedusha within a human body. And the question is, what part of tefillin conveys that Kedusha? How is that Kedusha imagined or envisioned? So it's based on a pasuk in Parshas Kisavo, Devarim Perech Chav Ches, V'ro, Kol HaMeharetz, Ki Shem HaShem Nikra Alecha, V'yaru Mimecha. People will notice, and I'll talk about in future Shiurim, the public nature of certain parts of tefillin. Is it directed at yourself? Is it directed at Jews? Is it directed at non-Jews? Is it directed at HaKadosh Baruch Hu? But either way, there's an optic of tefillin that people will see, in this case, the nations of the world. Ki Shem HaShem Nikra Alecha. Very interesting phrase. Typically, Chazal interpret Shem HaShem when it appears in the Torah, and it appears two other times, as a reference to Torah and Torah learning. Ki Shem HaShem Ekra, Pasuk in Hazinu, Havu Godel Elokeinu. Source of Birchas HaTorah. When you learn Torah, Shem HaShem Havu Godel. Recite a bracha, one of the only two brachas of Torah, one of the only two brachas of the Deoraisa. B'chol ha-makom asher azikir eshemi. When you mention my name, avoy lecho berachticha, the end of Yisra. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos assumes that this refers to someone studying Torah. U'minayin afilu echad. How do you know that one person studying Torah is able to draw the Shechina? Shenema, or b'chol ha-makom asher azikir eshemi. Wherever you learn Torah, avoy lecho, Hashem will be there. A name isn't the essence of a person. You could change your name and still be the same person based on your values, your identity, your consciousness, your memory. It would be awkward, but you'd be the same person. But the name is how you access someone. If you want to call someone sitting across the table from you, you don't have to describe them every time you want to mention them by their looks and their clothing and their height. And you just say, your name is David, your name is Yitzchak, your name is Yaakov. So the name is an access point. So Torah isn't Hashem. But it's the way that human beings can access Hashem, because Hashem is infinite and Torah is an approximation of His will in human terms. So it's Torah is Hashem Hashem because it's the way we access Hashem. The very famous statement of Chazal, Kol HaTorah Kula Shemosav Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Torah is Hashem's names. And some understand this Kabbalistically, that Torah can be reconfigured into different sequences of strings so that every word will be Hashem's name, even though our Torah, the way we read it, doesn't have Hashem's name as every word. But the more loose translation of this Mamar Chazal, Kol HaTorah Kula Shemosav Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Torah is Hashem's, a mixture of Hashem's names, means that it's Hashem's will, and it's by accessing His will we can access HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the simple reading of this pasuk in Kisavo, everyone will see, Kishem Hashem Nikru Alecha, they'll see that you are wearing salient sections of the Torah upon your body. I'll discuss in future Shiurim why these four sections were chosen, Kadesh, V'hayki, V'yacha from Bo, Shema from V'yashanan, V'hayim Shema from Ekev. They'll see that you're wearing Torah, and that will have whatever impact it's meant to have, captured by the phrase, V'yaru mimecha. Now, this in and of itself is enough to install Kedushas Agavra, Kedushas Adam, the fact that we're not just study from a Torah, but we wear a Torah. We can't wear an entire Sefer Torah. That would be restrictive, awkward, clumsy. So we just select four sections from the Torah, house them in our tefillin, and place them on our bodies. It's Shem Hashem. On the one hand, it reminds us that we don't accept this body-soul division, and our bodies are also receptors for a Sefer Torah, not just our minds and our thoughts, but our actual bodies can be wrapped in a Sefer Torah, because we don't look at the body as impure or frail or in some ways irreligious and ungodly. It also reminds us that Torah is not just something that's meant to be intellectual or cognitive, but there is an experiential element to Torah, which that first section of Kriyat Shema tries to highlight. Which is more formal and cognitive, but there's a transition. And that experientialism translates not just into talking about Torah at different stages, not just in the, so to speak, proverbial classroom, but while we're on the road and while we're relaxing, but it transitions into wrapping our bodies in Torah and framing our homes in Torah through mezuzah. So there really are two very important messages about Shem Hashem, meaning placing yourself in an envelope of Torah. But there's a more literal meaning to Shem Hashem Nikru Alecha, and it doesn't just mean you're wearing Torah, because after all, as much as we know that the parshios of Torah are in these tefillin boxes, certainly casual observers won't notice and won't be able to decipher that we're wearing Torah on our bodies. But there's a more literal translation to Shem Hashem Nikru Alecha. The Gemara says in Shabbos, Amar Abaye, Shin Shel Tefillin Halacha LeMoshe MiSinai. Rashi interprets that Gemara not just to the Shin, which is etched upon the Tefillin Shel Rosh, but it means a combination of three letters. Shin Shel Tefillin, Rashi says, Shabbos, the Shin on our Tefillin Shel Rosh, the Dalet on the back of our Tefillin, and the Yud on the Tefillin Shel Yad, that little protruding part of our Ritzuas HaTefillin, of the strap of Tefillin. Together, these three combine to form one of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's nicknames, Shakai, Shin, Dalet, Yod, one of Hashem's names. By wearing Tefillin, a person is literally wearing Shem Hashem, not just metaphorically wearing sections of Torah, but literally wearing Shin, Dalet, Yod on his body. And this is the theme of the Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Yud Beis. The person cannot neglect awareness of tefillin. Chayiv adam lemashmesh b'tefillin kol shah v'shah, to be aware. Again, for us, more or less, we wear it for 45 minutes, so it's not that difficult to forget that we're wearing tefillin. But imagine wearing tefillin 12 hours a day while you're in industry and work and play and day-to-day affairs. It's easy to forget you're wearing tefillin, so you have to touch it from time to time. Our minhag is to kiss it while we touch it. How do we know? So the Gemara extrapolates from tzitz. Ma tzitz, the Kohen Gadol wore the gold forehead plate, had one name of Hashem, Askar Achas, Kodesh Lashem, and yet the Torah says, V'haya mitzchal tamid, he can't forget that he's wearing the tzitz. Shelo yasiach daito mimenu, he can't have hesach adas. Tefillin sheish bram askar as harbe, tefillin has many times it mentions Hashem's names. obviously all the times that Hashem's name is mentioned in the Parshios, but of course the prominent one, literally on our tefillin, shin on the rosh, dalin on the neck, yud on the arm. So it's the Shem Hashem of tefillin that requires constant awareness, not the fact that we're wearing Torah, but that we're wearing Shem Hashem on the outer housing, reflected by multiple iterations of Shem Hashem on the inner housing. So the Kedusha that a person receives by wearing tefillin is not just based on the fact that he wears a Sefer Torah or sections of the Sefer Torah, but he literally wears Shem Hashem. Or Rabbi Elazar HaGadol, how he interpreted the Pasuk in Brachos Daf Vav, he says, V'ro kolam me'aretz ki Shem Hashem nikra alecha v'yaro mimekor, Rabbi Elazar HaGadol, Rabbi Elazar ben Horkin has said, Eilu tefillin shebarosh. Why was he highlighting tefillin shebarosh as opposed to tefillin shel yad in interpreting this Pasuk ki Shem Hashem nikra alecha? Because tefillin shel rosh contains the majority of the letters of Shin Dalet. So the Kedusha that tefillin is meant to install to a human being is not just because you're wearing Parshas Torah, but you're wearing Shem Hashem. In future shirim, I'll try to discuss why this name is implanted on the tefillin, why the shins are different. One is a four-armed shin, one is a three-armed shin. Why these four sections in the Torah were selected. And most importantly, or most immediately, we're not just wearing Torah, and we're not just wearing Shem Hashem, we're actually reproducing the activities of Hashem, who also wears tefillin, according to that Gemara in Brachos. And we'll talk about that Gemara. Gemara Tzoshet.